Well, timing is often everything in life, folks, and you've picked the right time to join the newest episode of Musings on Golf, where today you'll hear from one of the founders of the amazing Titleist Performance Institute. My name is Kelly Elbin, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to more great storytelling here on Musings on Golf. Bob Bupka, the voice of golf for TalkSport in the UK, is my co-host. Bob, I want to chat with you a little bit about what happened at the Cognizant Classic over the weekend. We're going to chat a little bit, look ahead, maybe a story or two about Mr. Palmer as we look ahead to his event this week. But you and I had what I thought was a really insightful interview yesterday with Dr. Greg Rose. I'm really excited, Bob, for our listeners to hear how Greg's timing was right in his life. And I was frankly amazed. More than 30,000 individuals have been certified through the Titleist Performance Institute. And all that does is make our game better for so many golfers.
You know, Kelly, one of the most outstanding changes, I think, in the world of professional golf is how fit the players are now. I mean, years ago, it was a round of golf. It was saddle up to the bar, have a beer. Those days are long gone. Fitness trailer first, workout second, and then maybe relax with a cool one.
And in the interview with Greg, he has a great story about Chichi Rodriguez and Chichi's advice to a young player on tour back in the days when, yeah, Bob, as you said, those fitness trailers had first started to come out. Part of the reason that I talked about timing, Bob, is for Greg Rose, a lot of really good timing in his life with the right people. Dave Phillips, for example, a PGA of America professional. He and Dave were the ones who started this Titleist Performance Institute, and it was really the vision of Wally Uline, who ran Titleist so beautifully for so long. And a visit that Wally had to Greg's place early in his career outside of Washington, D.C. And eventually that's what formed the Titleist Performance Institute. And hey, Bob, just a real quick, so we don't get too heavy on our listeners. This is all about the connection of the body and the swing, the Titleist Performance Institute. And what they refer to is really the critical connection between the body movement, how people move, and swing efficiency, making your golf swing better. And whether you are a PGA of America professional, a fitness professional, a medical professional, to go through and be certified through this Titleist Performance Institute is great for your business. And it whether it's the elite level golfer or the recreational golfer, they're passing along really useful information, Bob, that makes a difference in people's games.
Well, I think since the start of time with the golf swing, Kelly, it has always been consistency. If you could, whatever you did, no matter how you swung, if you swung like Jim Furyk, but you did it every time, it was perfect. And that's what they're striving to do now. Not only have it repetitive, but have it consistently in the right spots.
And in the right spots, and with the commitment to you know, I don't know how to say this properly, Bob, but I was at the Cognizant Classic over the weekend for a couple of days. There are so many good players out there, Bob, and they're such incredibly good shape, right? And the swings are all there. They're really, really good. I'm not sure you'll see in the history of golf so many good players. This kid, Joe Highsmith, who won it. Who the heck had ever heard of Joe Highsmith? 34th PGA Tour event. He took advantage of really a tough mistake by Jake Knapp in the final round. But my point on this is that the commitment to excellence, if you will, at that level, Bob, this fitness, we had Joey D on a few weeks ago. He works with, you know, some of the top players of LIV Golf. Bob, if you don't make that commitment, that level, you have no shot to be successful.
Yeah, but you got to add one factor in there, Kel, and that is you need the talent. You could want something so bad, you could work at it so long, so hard, but bottom line, Mr. Yeah. Kelly Elbin, you better have some talent.
Agreed. And I think when we talk after the interview about Joe Highsmith and some of the young stories that came out of Cognizant, Bob, I know you knew Mr. Palmer well. I always refer to him as Mr. Palmer. I think it's, you know, there was just such a level of respect for him. And there's so many stories. I know you have a lot about Arnold. I'd like to tell a little story before we go to the Greg Rose interview. My dad, Max Elbin at Burning Tree Club, my dad grew up in Cumberland, Maryland. Arnold grew up in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, maybe a couple of hours difference in the mountains of Western Maryland and then on up in the mountains of Pennsylvania. And my dad, past president of the PGA of America, and Arnold knew each other for many years. And in 2014, Arnold was honored by the PGA of America with the Deacon Palmer Award. It was something that was implemented to recognize a PGA professional who had overcome a physical limitation in his or her life to go on to do great things as a golf professional. And Arnold was the first recipient of this because Deacon was born with a club foot. That's why they put it in play. Arnold didn't have a physical limitation, but just as a way to thank him, he was the first recipient. So my dear friend Mallory Crossland, who still handles all the video work for the PGA, she arranged to have Mr. Palmer and his family come into Indianapolis, where Jimmy Roberts hosted a fireside chat. It was really cool. And Mallory went in to see Mr. Palmer, an hour or so, kind of in the green room. And of course, Arnold had a vodka in hand, and as you would expect. And he said, "Mallory, thank you for all this. We appreciate it. It's just great to all that you've done to help us here, get this done, get us here." And I went up to him and I just said, "Mr. Palmer, hi, it's Kelly Elbin." And without hesitation, he looked at me and he said, "Kelly," and he put his hand out like at the level of his knee. He said, "I can remember when you were knee high to your dad."
Wow. What a compliment. And
Bob, I've told that story a lot.
You should.
I've kind of gotten emotional telling it, but that's who he was, Bob. He was a unique and remarkable individual in our sport who clearly transcended our sport. And the Arnold Palmer Invitational is really his tribute, his ongoing legacy this week at Bay Hill. There was no greater person for the history of the game, in my opinion, than Mr. Palmer.
I agree wholeheartedly. It was always a pleasure to show up at Arnold Palmer's event and get an opportunity to spend a few minutes with him. The only thing I always worried about, Kelly, was putting my hand in his hand because his hands were so big.
They got lost in there, right?
Absolutely. Incredible. Very powerful man. A very generous man, a very kind man, and golf couldn't have been any luckier to have Arnold Palmer involved.
And I'm really pleased that his grandson, Sam Saunders, is continuing Mr. Palmer's legacy. He's part of the group there that makes some decisions on who gets some special exemptions and into the tournament. Field of 72, this is a signature event, a no-cut starting Thursday at Bay Hill. Okay, great interview with Greg Rose, co-founder of the Titleist Performance Institute. You'll hear that right after you hear from our friends, our corporate partners at William & Harry and Titleist. Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with your wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Bob, we all want to achieve peak performance in our lives, and our special guest today has helped countless golf, fitness, and medical professionals understand how a golfer moves so they can help their students maximize their abilities. He's the co-founder of the Titleist Performance Institute, and I got to know him back in the D.C. area when he was just beginning what has been an amazing journey in our game and our business. Dr. Greg Rose, my old friend, welcome to Musings on Golf. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
We certainly appreciate you taking the time to come join us on Musings on Golf. I have heard a lot about you, but I have never had the honor or pleasure of meeting you, and I'm really looking forward to this visit.
It's very kind. Thanks for having me. Kelly, funny quick story. I saw Keith Jones down at the PGA show We were doing a talk and reminded me that there was a day where we were talking about doing a radio show together. Do you remember that?
Absolutely. That is correct. Yeah, I know. Funny how things go in the ways that maybe we don't necessarily expect, right?
That's it. Pretty funny.
But Keith's a good man. I'm glad you guys saw. And by the way, I know Bob, unfortunately, wasn't at the PGA show. But Greg, that show, to me, spoke a lot about the health of the industry. You know, it had a couple of years where it was down, but man, it was jumping. It seemed to be a real positive 3 days.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, we always laugh about, not that it's not anything to laugh about, but COVID affected businesses in so many different ways. You know, there were so many businesses that were absolutely decimated by it. And then there was businesses like golf that was the only social distancing sport that exploded during COVID. So the golf industry has gone through a huge boom. And, you know, we're just lucky to be part of that.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah, I got a great question that I've been thinking about a lot. Greg, how can golfers reach their peak athletic performance?
Well, that's a great question. I would say the first thing always to me is you can be a sniper or you can throw grenades. In other words, if you really want to, I'd say like the least effective dose, you want to be a sniper. In other words, you want to figure out exactly what your problem is and focus on that. If you don't know what your problem is, then you got to throw a grenade. You got to work on everything, right? So to me, it all starts with an assessment, right? So instead of just guessing and saying, oh, I got to go work on strength and flexibility and power, well, maybe your problem is balance and none of the other things matter, right? So to me, to optimize your performance, the first thing you do is you get an assessment. And an assessment consists of a quick screen. You know, you can have any of the professionals that do this, any of our TPI certified professionals can take you through a screen in less than 5 minutes to identify any physical limitations. And you'd be surprised on how much improvement we can make with just 5 minutes, right? Like people think, oh, I got to go to the gym and work out for an hour. You know, if your problem is like, let's say your right hip mobility, you know, there's a couple of things. We can show you a couple of stretches you can do every morning that takes 5 minutes that will make a huge impact, right? So reaching optimal performance for me is number one is make sure the body isn't part of the problem. So you do a physical screen, right? Make sure you attack any of the things that are affecting your golf swing. I'm not talking about building the ideal beach body. I'm talking about building the ideal golf body, right? So making sure your mobile joints are mobile, making sure your stable joints are stable. And then, you know, when it comes to using those new, you know, resources, of course, getting with a golf professional and having them evaluate your swing and showing you how to implement those. You know, one of my pet peeves in the fitness world is people spend 3, 4, 6, 12 months totally killing themselves working on their body. And then they go out and they say, hey, I didn't notice a difference. Well, you got to remember, bad motor patterns are developed around physical limitations. So, for example, let's say your right hip doesn't rotate. in your backswing, since your right hip doesn't rotate, it's kind of hard to turn, so you sway instead. You kind of go sideways, right? You go and you figure out this is hurting your golf swing, so you go hire a trainer, you go work for 12 months, and you fix your hip. You go out and play golf, and all of a sudden, you're still swaying, right? All you did was you made your body have the ability now to not sway, but you still have a bad motor pattern. You need to now go learn how to play golf without a sway, and that's where the golf professional comes in. So marrying the two, the golf instruction and the physical, is where that's what the best players in the world do, and that's where you get the fastest bang for your buck. So to me, that's the best way to optimize your performance.
You know, I love the question, and the answer was terrific. Greg, we had Joey D on a couple of weeks ago.
Sure.
And he was great. And he and Bob go way back, and just the passion from that guy. I feel like you, Joey D, and maybe a few others, in a sense, you guys really were pioneers in everything that you sort of just explained. And I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on that, meaning that your thinking, your wording, your approach was very different from what golf was for years when it came to, quote, conditioning.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, Kelly, I started in the mid-90s, really, when I opened my first practice in the Washington, D.C. area. And, you know, back in the day, we used to have to convince people that your body mattered, right? It was back in the day, you know, you drove a cart, you drank beer, and you played golf, right? It's like, you're like, what does your body have to do with this, right? And really, I got to be honest with you, the reason I think I've had so much success was timing. Because in 1996, when I opened my first practice, that's also the first year Tiger Woods started, right? People saw this young phenom that he didn't drink beer, he didn't do it, he lifted weights, he looked like he was fit. And they started realizing that, you know, there were guys in the past, the Gary Players, the Nick Faldos, the Greg Normans, but they were the rarities, right, that worked on their body. I'll tell you a quick story that Brad Faxon told me. Brad Faxon told me when he first started on tour, Chichi Rodriguez came over, put his arm around him and said, son, I'm going to help save you a lot of pain. He pointed at the Health South trailer, which was brand new, where the fitness trailer was. He said, if you want to survive in this game for a long time, you stay out of that trailer. And Brad is one of the most, you know, fit guys who's worked out longer than anybody, which is kind of funny that he poked him. But yeah, the old school was, hey, if you go work on your body, you're going to screw up your golf swing. And it can change things, which, by the way, you can't have it one way. There are things we can do with your body to make your golf swing better. Of course, there are things we can do with your body to make your golf swing worse, which is why it's always great to make sure you're working with somebody who knows what they're doing. But I think there was a fear of that. There was a fear of changing your swing. And then there was the, hey, I've watched, you know, my friend Jim is the club champion and he doesn't do anything. And hey, it's, you know, it's great. And he plays great. But that all changed, like I said, when Tiger Woods came out, because, you know, it's one of those things where, yes, you can play good golf and not work out, right? Number one is, how long can you do that? Like, does your lifespan shorter, right? And number two is, like, if you have to play 36 holes that day, does that become a problem? And then number three is, what happens when you meet an athlete that can play as good as you can? You know, now all of a sudden, you know, that, and I'll never forget, we worked with Peter Uihlein. It's one of my origin stories, one of the youngest pros we ever worked with. And when he won the U.S. Amateur, I remember forgetting, on the first tee, he got up, and I think he was playing, I can't remember the player he was playing, but the first tee, I think he outdriven by like 100 yards, right? And I think when you're a player that worked your whole life, you get to this pinnacle, and you're playing against somebody else, and you think, you know, hey, you think we're equal. And all of a sudden, they hit a ball so much farther than you. Yeah. You kind of go, I don't think I can beat this kid. And I think that's what happened to a lot of golfers who were like, that weren't working out, that weren't taking care of their body. They're going, okay, I thought I was good, but I didn't think this golfer existed yet, right? But now this golfer is the norm, right? So, I mean, if you look at the golfers now, I mean, you know, back in the day, if you could hit 170 mile an hour ball speed, you were like, that was long. Right? If you hit 170 right now, you have no chance. I mean, you have to be the best putter in the world, right? So it's like 175 to 180 is like normal cruising out there on tour. You know what I mean?
Where do you see it ending?
The ball speed?
Yeah.
Well, we've done lots of research on this. So what's happened, like, if you go back 20 years, there was a couple players that could hit 180 miles an hour, like maybe one or two, like a John Daly or, you know, the J.D. Holmes. There was a couple guys that could do it. The majority of guys were like 164, 165. What you've seen is like if the ceiling's 180, you know, back in the day, there was one or two golfers. Next thing you started to see as time started going, there'd be a couple more, maybe three or four or maybe five. Now what we've seen is that the ceiling really hasn't risen as much as the floor has risen. So in other words, before you used to be able to compete at 160. Now there's so many guys between 175 and 180. It's almost the majority are right there, right?
Right.
So it's not like the floor, the ceiling has gone to 300 and, you know, it just keeps going up. It's that 180 ball speed, I'd say 170 to 180 is where almost everybody lives now. Where before, like I said, we're talking about 170. I don't see it going to 210 and 200 because there's a point of the body can only take so much. Like if you look at the guys that are really at the 190s, the Cameron Champs, even the Brysons, the ones that are up there, I mean, we can just start listing the injuries that these guys are going through. It's hard to sustain. And I'm not sure if you need that. Like sometimes that much speed gets you in trouble out there on some of the golf courses, right? And you can't even hit a driver sometimes. So I do believe agronomy is the way to stop this. We really wanted to stop this. But I feel like what you're going to see is just more people moving up to the 170 to 180. And, you know, there's a few, like I just worked on 2 6'8" players, right? I mean, it's like there's like NBA players coming in.
Yeah.
You know, like Krista Lamprecht, an example of one. I mean, these guys can create a lot of speed, but they're still like they'll cruise 185, 190 like that. I don't see it going. I don't see the bunch moving up a lot higher.
So let me try and explain this for the layman and myself included. It's not going to be a question of how high the speed goes. It's going to be more of a question of how many guys get that maximum speed. Am I right?
Yeah. So yeah, I guess what I'm saying, Bob, is what you don't want to do in competitive golf is you don't want to give your competitor a one or two club advantage. You just, and sorry, if you have a 7-iron and they have a 9-iron, you're going to lose most of the time, right? So I think the key is it's like keeping up with the Joneses. Like if the average person, average ball speed's 175, I need to be at that 175 to stay competitive. If I'm at 168, it's, you know, before that was competitive, but now it's like, you know, I'm hitting two clubs longer than everybody else. It's harder. The statistics show that your proximity gets better the closer you are to the hole. So you just don't want to give your competitors an advantage.
Hey, I noticed something. We're taping this on Monday, March 3rd. And I spent a couple days, guys, out at the PGA Tour event here in Palm Beach Gardens, the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches. And it, frankly, Greg and Bob, it had been a few years since I really had spent time and seen players up close. With the exception of a couple guys, Greg, in the 144 player field, every one of those guys is athletic. They're lean as hell. It's unbelievable, the conditioning, right? That athleticism, kind of what Bob was asking, man, and what you're saying, that athleticism is only raising your ability as a golfer at an elite level, correct?
Well, think about this, Kevin. When we were young, all the money in sports was in the big, like football and basketball and baseball, right? So if you were a big athletic kid, they're like, go play football, go play baseball, go play basketball, you're going to get money. Well, there's no other sport other than golf that you could make millions of dollars for over 40 years. If you think about it, if you start 20, you could make millions on the Champions Tour when you're 60, right? So now if you're young, athletic, big, strong, and I'm a parent or I'm a coach or an advisor, and I'm going, listen, I think you've got a chance to make it in golf. You can make millions for over 40 years. I mean, that, and you can still play with your kids when you're older and you don't have all the trauma for some of the other sports. I mean, it's a no-brainer. So we're getting like massive athletes. So there's two things, the longevity. So the more athletic you are, the longer you can last in the sport. I mean, look at Gary Player versus the other. Look, he's still playing. You know what I mean? Like that's the ultimate example. But if you can take care of your body, you can play over a sustained period of time. And then like we've just talked about, the better the athlete, the more competitive advantages you have when you're playing. Like it's easier for me to like, if I'm on a hole where there's danger, I, you know, a lot of guys today can go hit their 3-iron. Like we used to hit our driver, you know, I mean, distance wise, and they can control it. No problem. right? They're just bit. I mean, people don't think, like, look at guys like Phil Mickelson or Ernie Els or VJ. They're huge. People don't get, they're big. I mean, they are
physically big guys, right?
Physically big guys. Yep. They don't look like, you watch on TV, you don't see it. When you stand next to them, you're like, wow, these guys are, they're like John Rahm, who we've worked with since he was, I mean, he's a big dude, right? Yeah, there's some big athletes in the sport. Like I said, I just had 2 6-foot-8 guys coming in. It's just, it's where the money is.
Yep.
Fascinating information, and it's such an honor for us to have you on Musings on Golf. I'm learning by the second here.
Hey, Greg, talk a little bit about the foundation, how Titleist Performance Institute started, a little bit about who Dave Phillips is, and how the two of you started something with that incredibly powerful brand name ahead of it.
Yeah, so like we talked about earlier, I had a facility in Gaithersburg, Maryland called Club Golf. It was one of the first ever golf performance centers where we had, you know, indoor hitting and we had putting areas. Then we had all the exercise. We had medical, everything from orthopedic surgery to chiropractic in there. Dave Phillips was the head teaching instructor at Kays Valley in Baltimore. And one day I got a call saying, hey, Greg, I got a really important customer, that client that I'd like to bring down with his dad. And the next day he walked in with Peter Uihlein and Wally Uihlein. Right. So Peter was, I believe, around 10 years old at that time. And Dave's like, listen, Wally's CEO of Titleist. This is his son. His son's like, he was winning everything in Massachusetts. Like, he was just, the kid was a young phenom. And so we took him through an evaluation. And I showed Peter and Wally kind of what some of the early research we were doing with 3D motion capture. This was like archaic, but it was at that time, it was state of the art. Took him through the physical exam. And Dave always tells the story that he was leaving Club Golf, and Wally Uihlein was like, I think that's the future of golf. The governing bodies can control equipment and what you can do with balls and clubs, but no one can stop human innovation. And he's like, I want to be part of that. And that's really where this whole thing started. So Wally and Dave reached out and were like, hey, we really want to show you something. And fast forward maybe 6 months later, Wally invited me and Dave out to San Diego, California, showed us this test facility that they had in Oceanside, California, and said, this is what we have right now. All we do is equipment. But if we wanted to start testing the body and stuff, what should we do? And so we kind of became like consultants. And I'll never forget, he had us bring out my 3D equipment and my physical testing. He's like, I'm going to get some players out here. I'd like you to check some more players. I didn't realize it was the world match. So we went out there in February at La Costa. It was the world match. And he had 15 of the top 20 players in the world lined up for us to go through. It was amazing.
And, was that all intimidating for you, by the way?
It was a surprise. I was excited. I didn't really, if you want to hear the story, it's a pretty funny story. So we get out there and Dave and I were setting up in this little makeshift lab that they had there. And he's like, I'm going to send some players in. And first Phil Mickelson walks in, then Ernie Els walks in. Right. And then, we had the list kept going on. I think right after VJ, all of a sudden this young kid and Butch Harmon walk in, and Butch has got, hey, I've got this young phenom, his name's Adam Scott, and I'd like you to take him through. So I take Adam through the whole thing, and I show Butch this, and Butch is a great friend and was always into this stuff. And we got through, like, we had like Scott Hoke, and we had like all these, Curry Strange. So it was this great player after great player. And Wally kind of came in and looked, and he was looking at it, and he was like, Greg, your 3D shows how efficient players swing and like which one's the best. He's like, they all look the same. Like, I don't see, like, how's this going to help me? I'm like, well, look who you're bringing me. These are the best players. Like, they're all great. Like, and I'm going, man, I think he's not going to like this because it doesn't look different. He thinks everybody's the same. I'm like, but he's not. He's giving me the best players in the world. As I'm saying this, all of a sudden, Butch walks back in with Jose Mario Faba. At that time, Jose was injured, but I didn't know that, right? I don't know if you remember, he had a lower back thing, but at the time, they thought he had a foot problem. So he comes in, and Butch is like, hey, would you mind checking Jose? Because I'd like to see, we're struggling with some stuff. So I hook him up, and all of a sudden, Jose hits, and he was the first one where it wasn't efficient. And I'm like, how do I tell a 2-time master? Like, hey, there's, and Wally even looked at it, he was like, hey, that actually doesn't look the same. And we're like, yeah, that's what I'm like, there's something wrong here. And I was like, Butch, there's something wrong with the lower body. And he's like, well, that's why I wanted you to check this out, because we were having some problems with his foot. So I think that was like where Wally was like, oh my God, this stuff can actually see things that maybe we can't see. And it led to even more interest where he was like, all right, I want to figure out how to do this more. And I remember he sent me Brad Faxon, Peter Jacobson, and Tom Kite to go spend like a day at our facility just to test our stuff. And then he was like, guys, I'd like you to lay out what you think we should do at Titleist out here at Oceanside to collect this data and stuff. So Dave and I kind of wrote down on a piece of paper. We said, here's what we would do. If we had this 33-acre facility, this is what we would build to test the players, not just the equipment, but the players. And Wally, I'll never forget, said to us, he goes, I love the whole thing. I love the whole plan. He goes, I'll make a deal with you. He goes, I'll build this if you and Dave quit your jobs and come run it. And we had to twist our arms. And 2003, we flew out and opened up the Titleist Performance Institute.
Wow, what a story.
Cool story. That is a great story, right?
Yep.
Unreal.
I always say, you'd rather be lucky than good. I was just lucky there at the right time, brought the right player in. And
with talent is always a good formula.
That's it.
By the way, we're delighted to be with Dr. Greg Rose, co-founder of the Titleist Performance Institute, here on Musings on Golf. So so many great names you just talked about. Let's look at a modern player. I know you spent some time with Will Zalatoris.
Yep.
Now, Will, unfortunately, has missed a lot of time. Back issues, major back issues for a young guy. And I think, Greg, a lot of that is just the speed from which he generates and hitting the golf ball and everything that goes into it. What were the issues with Will, and what have you done to try to help him not only play well now for the next year or so, but for the next 10, 20, 30 years?
Well, good news. I saw Will last week. He at the updated Riviera at Torrey Pines, he's doing great right now. But my part was very minuscule in this. I actually saw Will for the first time after he was injured. So he went down, got injured, but lower back. I got a call from his caddy, is a very good friend of mine. So his caddy was like, hey, we got to go out there. So I actually flew to Dallas to go meet with him to see, because he was hurt, and met with him and his team. Great team around him, great coach and trainer and everybody. And it was pretty clear to me that there was some, when I finally got him out to TPI, we took him through all the biomechanics. There was pretty clear biomechanical issues in his swing that were keep making his lower back vulnerable. And here's one of those, a great example of a 24-year-old kid when I saw him going, listen, you got to last 40 more years and you already have two disc injuries in your lower back, right? And he, to his credit and his team's credit, they were like, we want to know what we're doing in our swing that's causing this, and we want to stop it now. I'm like, perfect. I mean, that because this, it won't last. Can do this. And what he was doing is he had very excessive right side bend on the downswing. So in other words, what he would do is in transition, his right hip would go high and his right shoulder would go low. So it creates this pinching on the right side of his body. And I'm like, listen, you can break your right shoulder down, but your left hip better go up. If your right hip goes up and your right shoulder goes down and these two things crunch, they'll collide and create problems. So he went, you know, he ended up having surgery, and he worked with his team for, you know, 6-12 months trying to change that. And keep fingers crossed, knock on wood, he's playing pretty darn good and pain-free right now.
So how does that, when you diagnose that and he, does that mean a fundamental change to his golf swing, though?
It had to be. Like I said, this is really difficult. You take one of the best players in the world,
right?
And you say, your swing's killing you, right? I mean, this is a very hard conversation. So the good news is he already knew that. He couldn't play anymore. He was injured. He was out. And he was like, you know, I want to make this change. And really, a lot of it had to do with setup and a little bit of weight shift. So I didn't think it was that difficult. I didn't think it was like a fundamental change the way you learn to play golf, right? And like I said, I think it's one of those things where he just wanted to make sure, and this is where most people use us at TPI, is we're like the lab. Like, the worst thing for a golfer is guessing. I don't want to search or guess. I want to know exactly what the problem is. So we have some pretty cool technology to be able to put on. We put these 3D motion capture sensors on his body. He stands on force plates. And we can see exactly where your efficiency is breaking down. And you could see for him, from between lower body and trunk, it was breaking down. And you could see that the way the spine was working, and we can compare you to one of the largest data sets, or the largest data set in golf in the world, to show you, like, your peers don't do this. Like, this is something that potentially leads you to vulnerable.
Yeah, and you know, I know you have an engineering degree from the University of Maryland, right?
I
I'm
do.
wondering, can we talk just for a second about golf? Did you grow up playing golf? Do
I
you play
didn't.
a lot of golf? And then how did you
Yeah.
merge play golf with making it your career?
Okay, so when I was I did engineering in Maryland, and when I was there, I got a job working for an engineering firm, and the guy that I was working for was like, "Hey, listen, we do a lot of deals on the golf course. You should learn how to play golf." And there was a golf course at the University of Maryland. So I went out there, and I always say one of two things happens when you play golf. You either hate the sport or you become an addict. I don't think there's a middle, right? And I became the addict really quick, right? And there's this amazing thing about your GPA and your handicap. They both go down together, right? So as I started playing more, my handicap's getting better, and I'm changing my classes to night classes so I can have more time. But then I realized that I don't have a lot of money. I'm in college. So I go to the University of Maryland head pro and I say, "Hey, listen, I'm an engineering student here. I love the game. I'd love to get a job working here just so I can play for free." And I ended up being the guy that drove the range cart at the driving range at the University of Maryland. I would go there early in the morning. I'd pick the field. I'd hit like two or three buckets and I'd go pick them up again and then we'd open, right? And I'd do this every day. And believe it or not, I became a scratch golfer before I left Maryland, right? So
Wow.
like that's easy to do when you play every day. And the pros there were like, you know, they took me as like, "Oh, look at this kid. He doesn't know what he's doing." So they were giving me pointers and lessons the whole time. And I became friends with Wayne DeFrancisco. You know Wayne, right?
Sure. No,
Wayne
Wayne very well. Yeah.
helped.
Great teacher. What a good teacher he is.
I was exposed to some really great teachers. Bill Strasbaugh used to come to my office. Like some really good, you know, coaches in that area. And to further my story, so I basically am working in engineering, and engineering teaches you how to think. It's like systems, right? Very different than the medical world, but I'll explain that in a second. But I get to my senior year, and I'm now the starter at Maryland, so I have all the power, right? So I get to control the place. And I'll never forget, there was these three guys that used to always come out playing, and they were always like my last tee time. And one of the days, the guy asked me, there he's like, "Hey, we always see you out here, Greg. You should join us." And I was like, didn't take a lot for me to convince me to go join somebody. So I went and played with these guys, and the one guy there, his name was Keith, was a chiropractor, and basically built this relationship with Keith. And next thing you know, I graduate engineering and decide engineering is not for me. I'm gonna go be a chiropractor. And I added a fifth year at Maryland, got my pre-med, graduated engineering with a minor in pre-med, and went off to chiropractic school. And when I graduated chiropractic school in early 96, I was saying, like, you know, in chiropractic school, you didn't really have a lot of time during the day. You were in school the whole time. So I'm a golf addict trapped indoors, right?
Yeah.
I was trying to think of any excuse to get me back outside. And what you do is your last year of chiropractic school is like your internship. So you're seeing patients, and you have to go get your own patients. And I don't know about you, but most people don't want to work with a student chiropractor, right? So what I did is I took my golf clubs out. I went to the local golf course, started playing golf, and I was like, "Hey, listen, they'll pair me up with one, two, or three people. I'll meet somebody," because I remember when I was in Maryland, everybody had pain. Hip hurt, shoulder hurt, back hurt. I go out and play with them. If they said they'd hurt, I'd say, "Hey, I'm a chiropractor here at the school, and I work with golfers." And lo and behold, my plan worked. I literally graduated with nothing but golfers as patients. So when I came back to Washington, D.C., I was like, "I got to open up a golf practice." Like, nobody had ever done that before, right? But I was like, I'm just gonna go for it. That's what I love is golf. I love helping people and studying the golf swing. And I opened up a practice called Advantage Golf, and 9 years later, I had 3,000 golfers from all over the world, and the rest is history.
What a fascinating story.
Yep, it's all, like I said, it's all luck.
Timing and hard work. You can't beat that combination.
I always say, you know, like the hard work thing to me, I feel like I'll outwork anybody because, Bob, I don't think I've ever worked a day in my life. I love what I do, right? So it's like people have to tell me to go home.
Well, that's a wonderful feeling, and
It
it
is.
certainly has been a wonderful feeling having you with us here on Musings.
The Titleist Performance Institute is primarily for instructors, et cetera, right? How do they go through the process? Who are they? I mean, they're PGA professionals and others. How do they go through the process to become certified?
Yeah. Okay. So TPI has two services. Number one is we take care of our players worldwide, right?
Okay.
Any college player worldwide. Now we use that information that we learn from the greatest players in the world studying, and we do a certification program for what we call the sphere of influence. Anybody who works with our players, golf professionals, medical professionals, fitness professionals, those are the primary sphere around players. So we take all this great information we're learning from the best players in the world, and we share it with these people through our certification. So on our website, mytpi.com, you can go on, you can get certified. And basically, there's online part. We do live classes as well. And we have three levels. So you can go level one, level two, level three. And then we have five tracks. We have a track for golf professionals, one for medical professionals, one for fitness professionals. We have one if you just work with kids for junior development. And then we have one just on power, how to hit the ball farther, right? So we have those five specialties. And basically anybody can do that that's interested in working with golfers. We kind of, like I said, share with you some of the what the best players in the world are doing. It's amazing how many, or it's hard for you to name a player now that doesn't have a TPI certified professional on their team. So the amount of data we keep getting, and we have an app that the players can actually that the coaches or fitness professionals or medical professionals can screen you, like I said, in 5 minutes. It has an AI machine learning where it'll compare you to all of our data, and it can build you an entire workout program specifically for you, like a sniper, like we talked about. That's our TPI program that we have 34,000 certified coaches in 64 countries all over the world right now. And we teach it in 10 languages. Yeah, it's crazy.
Hey, Bob, look, Titleist is a partner of our show, and we appreciate that. But beyond that, Bob, you and I have talked about this. So, Greg, we had Bob Vokey on a couple of weeks ago,
Bob's the
and just
best.
the passion that he brings, right? And Scotty Cameron through the putter line all the years. It's fascinating to me that the Titleist name and the Titleist Performance Institute, I mean, those are three massive parts of the game: the short game, putting, and now fitness. The Titleist has attached its name to, and certainly having two big names in Scotty and Mr. Vokey, from a branding standpoint, it's massive. But I'm amazed by how many that you have all of that influence on. How many? What'd you say? How many
34
thousands?
thousand.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, we have. I'm telling you, we have some of the best minds. And when you have this many great minds, like you're talking about in the program, it just keeps getting better. And by the way, I saw you had David Kidd on here too.
Yeah.
Like, David just redesigned. We were going through a total rebuild of TPI. He just built nine holes for us at our TPI facility and just changed our practice facility. So we got so many great people in the golf world that are willing to share and bring, come and bring knowledge together, and it's really cool. Like if you go to most sports, like if you go to the Dallas Cowboys and say, "Hey, share your data," what are they going to say to you?
Nope.
No chance. Go to the Yankees, say, "Can," no chance. Titleist is like, well, yeah, if we get more golfers playing, that they'll buy more golf balls, more equipment. So yeah, share everything you learn. I've never been in a professional sporting organization where they're like, everything you learn, share so that everybody can get better. And I'm like, this is incredible, right? It's really, really is cool.
Just a couple final questions from me. Greg, we talked earlier about the old days, if you will, of how people looked at things. What's kind of a general message you would have for recreational golfers today who maybe haven't made that commitment, or maybe look at working out in not the most positive ways? Why do they need? Why should they consider committing to it? No, and frankly, no matter the age.
Yeah. So here's what I would say is number one is if you're a golfer, usually you're addicted. You love the sport, right? And it's something where you're like, hey, when I retire, this is what I'm going to do full time. I don't want you to know the stats, but there's an amazing amount of people that when they retire, they can't physically play anymore, right? So you got to start looking at these things now because there's no easier time than now to start attacking some of these things. And like I said earlier, with 5 minutes a day, can make it so that you can play till you're 100 years old, right? So in as much as golf instruction is important, if your body doesn't work, it doesn't matter if you have the information, you can't do it, right? So your body is the most important piece of equipment. Simple things can make this happen. Like you don't have to go to the gym, you can do it in your house. Of course, if you like the gym, we can go crazy, all that kind of stuff. But I think my number one message would be, if you think your body is going to be a potential problem, or you feel like you want to take your game next level, just go get a screen from somebody, and you'll see like really quickly where your problem is, and how fast you could attack these things. Like if you did, like I said, 5 minutes 4 times a week, you can make massive changes. I mean, that's like nothing. I'm like, if you don't have 5 minutes, well, then never mind. But, and so get evaluated. Don't guess. Like I said, why guess when you can assess, right? It just makes life so much easier. And you'll thank me when you retire and you have time and you want to go enjoy the sport, because there's nothing more frustrating than being addicted to something and you can't have it. You know what I mean?
No question. Final question from me, and Bob and I have really enjoyed hearing the responses and the varied responses, quite honestly, to this question. And it's a simple one. If you could have a dream foursome, three other individuals, Greg Rose of Titleist Performance Institute, with whom you could play a sort of a magical round of golf, whether those individuals are still with us or they're deceased, who would those three be and where would you play?
Yeah, so I think where I'd play easy, that's Augusta National. There's just so much history and, you know, every shot you hit there, you're like, oh, I remember when Fred Couples had this shot, or, you know, like, I feel like that's a no-brainer. And me coming from the instruction world, you know, like, it'd be like, whose brains would I want to pick? You know what I mean? That's kind of, and I'm going to go, I'll start with any instructor, I think, would say this, Ben Hogan. That for sure would be on there. Just love to pick his brain. This one might be an unusual one, but Mo Norman, just like, you know, everybody who's in instruction talks about the guy who could hit any shot in the world. And then if I was to throw a third one in there, I might as well get my short game questions answered. I'll put a Seve Ballesteros in there, right? So I feel like I could pick the brains of those three guys and learn some stuff that I could bring back home, which would be pretty cool.
That'd be quite a foursome, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. I think I'd be the caddy of those three guys, but yeah, it'd be fun.
Bob, you and I have talked about this, right? The great qualities of our game and hearing from Greg, it's pretty cool what he's been able to accomplish.
Unbelievable. You know, what one person with dedication, with talent, with perseverance, that's what can be accomplished. You know, Greg Rose certainly has achieved that at all those levels.
I really appreciate it. I got to say, I wasn't alone for sure, but I really appreciate the kind words.
Well, you're one of the best, my man. One of the best.
And thanks for having me.
We appreciate you being on Musings on Golf.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Bob, as you said, the old days, the old way of thinking is long gone, and I hope our listeners enjoyed hearing what Greg and the folks at TPI, Titleist Performance Institute, continue to do to shape the modern game of strength and conditioning. And it's just the way the world is when it comes to sports at that level.
And certainly being a gentleman, because you had no finer example of being a gentleman in the sport of golf than Mr. Arnold Palmer.
Let's talk for a second. As I mentioned, I was at the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches, the PGA Tour event over the weekend here in Palm Beach Gardens, where I live. Joe Highsmith, you know, he shot 64 each of the final two rounds to win. I think it's the lowest, finishing a total 128 in the history of the event. He's only played 34 events. Jake Knapp, who started with 59, which is almost an improbable score on the champion course at PGA National, made a triple bogey on the 11th hole in the final round, and it cost him the event. But also, Bob, Luke Clanton. Luke Clanton is the 21-year-old junior, Florida State University, who indeed made the cut, as we had talked about last week, and that earned him, through the PGA Tour University Accelerated Program, his PGA Tour card for this year. He has to play in the NCAA championships to qualify. But look, Bob, golf has to, and I think continues to, to churn over in a good way. You got to get young players out there. And this kid Highsmith was pretty unflappable. And wait till Luke Clanton bursts on the scene as a professional.
Yeah, what's on the horizon, I think, is going to surprise all of us. And I got a big smile on my face because I think it's nothing but better golf, better people, better involvement by the general public. Exciting times are ahead.
Yeah, I agree. And for Joe Highsmith, a lot of great times are ahead. Let's hear what he had to say after winning the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches in terms of what this does for his career at a very young age of 24.
Augusta National is a place that has a really special place in my heart. I've only been there a couple times as a spectator, and I was able to play, fortunately, with a couple members last year. And I mean, it is just like the most incredible place on earth. And I went last year to the tournament just as a spectator, because I just, any chance that I can get to walk out there is pretty, you know, I'm going to take advantage of that. But to be playing in that tournament is going to be very special. And, you know, something obviously you work towards your whole life, but you never really know when you're going to get that chance. And it's pretty sweet for that to be coming pretty soon. And then obviously, you know, the schedule changes will be great. It's an extreme advantage to be playing in those elevated events for how much money and points those guys get to play for. So, you know, fortunately was able to get into those for the rest of the year, and hopefully I can play well. And but it'll be great, I think, to get out and play with, you know, some of those guys. A lot of guys, you know, those best players in the world, I don't really, especially last year and even this year, don't play in the same events as any of them. So it'll be pretty fun to get to compete and kind of see how I stack up with some of them. And just to get like that schedule will be really ideal. And, you know, a lot of other things that come with the win are pretty special, but certainly Augusta's number one by far.
Well, you are very special yourself.
Well, and Bob, life-changing victory for Joe Highsmith, right? I mean, what he just said, my goodness gracious.
Oh, no one has any idea. You know, it's a big thrill to go to the Masters as a spectator. It's a far bigger thrill, obviously, to go to the Masters as a competitor. And boy, oh boy, nothing but good times ahead for Mr. Highsmith.
Yeah, I agree. A few things just to kind of put a bow on this episode. I had a chance yesterday to go to the TGL match that was played in the afternoon. It was on ESPN2. Bob, on TV, I'm not a big fan. I haven't been. It just guys hitting balls into a screen. But I'll tell you what, you walk into that Sohai pavilion there on the campus of Palm Beach State College, the technology is off the charts. It's incredible. And frankly, it's a lot of fun. It's entertainment. The crowd was pretty good. You had the evening event last night. I didn't get in free for that one. I got in free for the first one, though, which was always nice. But just the feel of it, it's entertainment. I do think there are ways that they could make it more of an entertainment vehicle. But to be there in person, Bob, it's like a lot of things, right? If you're there in person as opposed to what you see on TV, it's a big difference. And again, the technological stuff around this is just amazing.
Oh, so state of the art that it's absolutely mind-boggling, to put it mildly.
Hey, a couple of things. Lydia Ko got her 23rd win on the LPGA Tour over the weekend with the HSBC win, and she's right on the footsteps of overtaking Annika Sorenstam for the all-time money list on the LPGA. What a great, great player she's been. A couple of fascinating things. Dale Whitnell, an Englishman, playing in the in the South African event on the DP World Tour. Probably people have heard about this. Made two aces in the same round. He had never made a hole-in-one, Bob, in competition. He makes two in the same round, the opening round in South Africa. The odds of doing that, 67 million to one. How'd you like to have that bet and have that come through, Robert?
Absolutely incredible. I mean, how many golfers have died not making a hole in one? I mean, avid golfers.
I hope I don't perish too soon. I still don't have one, and I hope I don't perish too soon, Robert.
Oh, you'll get one. You're going to get one, Kelly.
I sure hope so. All right, final thing. I thought this was the story of the week, quite honestly. Ryan Peake, the Australian who wins the New Zealand Open. Okay, fine. There's so much more to it. Bob, this guy was a member of a biker gang, and now he's qualified to play in the Open Championship by his victory. 5 years he spent in jail, and he credits golf with giving him the opportunity to have a second chance in life. Ryan Peake, talk about peak performance. What an unbelievable story. And for him, when he tees it up at Royal Portrush in July in the Open Championship, I can only imagine the emotions that'll be going through him.
It's just an incredible story. I mean, congratulations. I mean, that's all I can say. I mean, there's so many fascinating, wonderful things happening in the world of golf now. We're so thrilled to be part of Musings on Golf, and doing this show with you, Kelly, is my biggest thrill of the week, and I really, really enjoy it.
Love you, brother. And next week, we're going to be joined by Taylor Pendrith, the Canadian, who is he won the CG Cup Byron Nelson last year, first victory on the PGA Tour. He's played twice representing the international team in the President's Cup. Taylor will be playing this week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. This kid's really good, Bob, and he's among that sort of that Canadian contingent that includes Corey Connors. That really have come on the scene, and looking forward to talking with Taylor. For my good friend Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off. Thank you for joining us. Hit it straight, and maybe I'll make a hole in one this week and tell you about it next week on Musings on Golf.